Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Hey, welcome in, everyone. We go back to the White House here on the Dom Show, even though we're paying attention to what's going on here in Philadelphia. You know, the first time I had Peter Navarro on, it came, I forget which interview I saw. If I were President Trump, I couldn't think of a more passionate, aggressive, and knowledgeable person to be out there drilling down on things involving employment, manufacturing, global trade. Peter Navarro is the assistant to the president for trade and manufacturing policy. He joins us again here in Philadelphia on Talk Radio 1210. Hey, Peter, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Dom, my friend, I'm actually going to be visiting up your way next week to celebrate what has been a great success at my beloved Philly shipyard.
Oh, we got to get you on from the visit. Shipyard. Yeah, we need
I'd
to get you on.
I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what's going on there. It's you know, when I first got here at the White House after the campaign with the president, the president pulled me in the office and he said, you know what, we got to get our 350-ship Navy going. We got to rebuild our shipyards that have basically been decimated by the Biden-Obama kind of sequestration. And I took that to heart. And so one of the shipyards that was really falling on the hardest of hard times was your shipyard there in Philly. It had less than 100 workers there, and it had no ships in the pipeline to renew things. So I sat about every week. We had a task force. We brought up Jimmy Hart, who's the labor head there. We brought up the owners of the shipyard. We had from the Department of Defense one of the guys, Jay Stefano, who focuses on ships, and then most importantly, a guy named Dick Balzano over at MARAD, the Maritime Administration. And what we did, Dom, over the course of these 3.5 years, was first we got the shipyard some repair work with ships like the Antares and the Pollux, right? The yard had never done a lot of repair work, but it was like, that's a great hedge in the shipbuilding industry. So we got that going, and we got employment up to several hundred from there. In the meantime, we never put our thumbs on the scale, but we did help the yard bid better. And just a month or so ago, they got a new contract for these ships that are going to allow them to, at peak, listen to this, Dom, over 2,000 workers will be
wow.
at the Philly shipyard. And that means, you know, if you take the multiplier effect, that's like a 1-to-7 multiplier that ripples out through the entire city and state and then the supply chain. And so this doesn't happen by accident. I mean, and we've had success with Philly. I just got back from Marinette, Wisconsin with the president, where they got a big contract for a new beautiful frigate. I've helped the Eastern shipyard down in the Panhandle of Florida when they were having some trouble with a Coast Guard cutter contract. And, you know, the Bath Ironworks is actually, we repurposed them a little bit to help us build swabs in Guilford, Maine. So this is kind of the stuff I do, Dom. It's all about creating manufacturing jobs for this country, for the president. but also saving lives and defending this country. So,
well, let me interrupt and say, too, something I wanted to talk to you about, Peter. You have been one of the best people pushing back effectively against China and just the overwhelming stuff that Democrats and Republicans have allowed to go on. I've said on the show the courage of this president and what you've done to do it in a first term. If you do it in a second term after you're reelected, because China can push back too. So it took a lot to get the Chinese to see a day of reckoning is here.
This is the not just the toughest president on China, but the only president, Tom. This is what. So here, let me do this flow for you here. So the last couple of decades, China cheated, and we lost American jobs. China cheated with its unfair trade practices, stealing our intellectual property, and we lost over 5 million manufacturing jobs and over 70,000 factories. What the president did in standing up to China was put defensive tariffs around this country against the Chinese. Over $350 billion of their subsidized imports are now tariffed. But now what we have is the China lied, Americans died problem. The Chinese Communist Party lied about spawning the virus, hiding the virus, and sending it over here to infect the American people. And now we've had over 130,000 Americans die at the hands of the Chinese Communist Party virus. So this is the other thing. And here's the thing, Dom. It's like right now the American people are angry about being locked down. They're anxious about their economic future. They're fearful they're going to get the virus. And the problem is that we've directed all of that negative energy against each other. And it's broken down on partisan lines.
Right.
And what we need to remember is where this virus came from and what the Chinese Communist Party is doing to this country with their information warfare, where they're using our social divisions now to basically pimp their own authoritarian repressive model as the one that needs to be the one for the rest of the world. And we cannot forget that, because this election is going to be about jobs, it's going to be about China, it's going to be about law and order with reforms, and all of those things track back to what the Chinese Communist Party has done in terms of spawning, creating this virus, and attacking America.
Exactly. Peter, let me interrupt and ask, okay, the May and June numbers, you don't know what a throw it is, because I'm the first one on when that comes down at the end of the month to see what's happened, particularly June. And to drill down on it, the Wall Street Journal did that very well, I think, the inside story of how much we're rolling back. But here's the question. What do you see with the July numbers, given we almost see forces out there happy to slow down the economy so that they win in November? What can you tell us is going on?
Isn't that so interesting, Dom, that the Democrats and the call it the mainstream media, but it's really the left-wing media, want to create this climate of fear and hysteria so that we can't have a strong economy. They wanted us to lock everything back down, and it's all about defeating Donald J. Trump in November. It's insane. Here's what I see. I see that we are going to continue to bounce back from the trough of the China virus recession, and that's all to the good. But I also know that there are profound structural changes going on in the economy as a result of the China virus that are affecting two things, both certain sectors of our economy, like hospitality, energy, and transportation, but also our major metropolitan areas. That China virus, in some sense, it was the equivalent of the Twin Towers attack, in the sense that it attacked the twin pillars of our urban life, right? The high density as well as the mass transit. And so as these, and I walk around D.C. here, Tom, it's I don't know what it's like in Philly, but I see nothing but plywood and boarded up businesses with graffiti on them and mm-hmm. the police having to protect statues instead of neighborhoods. It's crazy. And I suspect, in Chicago, there's more people dying by guns than there are by the virus. It's crazy, 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 crazy stuff. So my point is simply that we're going to see service sector refugees that we're going to have to employ. And the only way I think out of this is to follow President Trump's mantra of creating manufacturing jobs that will,
exactly.
And that means bringing back our supply chains from China and elsewhere. So that's what we're focused on. And the idea of turning the keys over to the White House in January to Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and AOC, they will practice policies which will destroy this economy. It will be raising taxes on the middle class. It'll be a bunch of regulations that'll hamstring businesses that are already being hammered. They're going to put out of business every oil driller and fracker in Pennsylvania, Ohio, the Dakotas, and Texas. And worst of all, we're going to go back to the old ways of accommodating China and trade,
exactly,
and sending our jobs offshore. So, this is going to be. I'll bet you that everybody says this is going to be the most important election in history. Every time there's a presidential election,
I think this one
but,
is.
At one point. It could be true.
Absolutely.
And I think given the China virus and the stakes, I think this is absolutely right.
We'll talk with you hopefully next week. Peter, thanks for the great work you do. Thanks for joining us.
I'll give you a call from.
Thank you, Peter. All right. Peter Navarro with us here on Talk Radio 1210. Thanks, Peter, very much. I wanted to get ready, though. Kellyanne Conway is on the way. We're landing the great guest here as if it's what? Philly International. All right, that was this guy is as good as it gets as the advisor, the driver, the executor of the Trump policy, particularly toward China and the like. Let's bring back the ultimate Jersey girl, Philly girl too, officially. Kellyanne Conway from the White House joins us today on Talk Radio 1210. Hey, Kellyanne, welcome in.
Tom, what's up, buddy? Great to have you. Great to be on your show.
Well, thank you, Kellyanne. I wanted to ask you, too. I'm not sure how this works. I know you're not the speechwriter, but the president's Mount Rushmore speech, I actually liked the July 4th better, but the setting and the whole deal, calling out the cancel culture, lionizing American heroes, and whoever came up with the idea of let's have a garden of heroes, it's genius because it stimulates talking about who should be in there. And yet the media just can't take this. It is seen as hateful and divisive.
One sure way you know that President Trump has succeeded in delivering an inspirational, patriotic, uplifting, visionary, forward-looking speech is how the mainstream media reacts to it. And there were some writers who went over the top, even by their own standards. I have to say, pretty disappointed in a few of them, because they usually don't just jump into the mosh pit right away and use certain words to describe the president. But they're getting desperate. The Mueller investigation report testimony didn't work. Impeachment didn't work. Claiming we had a recession last August didn't work. Trying to pin a global pandemic on this president, the China virus, hasn't worked quite as they wanted to. So they're always grasping at straws, but they feel like with just about 100 plus days to go until the election, they're going to gnaw on this bone as much as they can, but there's no indication that most Americans are buying it. And elections are about the future, not the past. Elections are about incumbent presidents who stand up and say, look, here's the progress report, but for me being president, all these great things would not have happened. All these people would not have been helped. People who are languishing on drugs, in prison, people who didn't have a job, people who suffered under no health insurance who now have it, people whose private property rights were abridged, folks who were worried about the nuclear capability of Iran or North Korea. The list goes on and on. The 50 hostages and detainees who have returned to American soil because of this president's administration's efforts. Pick a card, any card. Right there in your state of Pennsylvania, 50,000 school children are on a waiting list for school choice, for opportunity scholarships. The Republican-led legislature keeps passing that legislation, and your Democratic governor, Tom Wolf, keeps vetoing it. He's standing in the schoolhouse door, but he's standing in the exit. He won't let these kids exit from failing schools and have a better choice. So that's the president's progress report, but also he's the visionary. Because he is saying, hey, folks, in 2020, we have heroes, and here they are. We're going to have a garden of heroes, and you're not going to rip it down and vandalize
it. Hey, Kellyanne, let me interrupt and ask you, who would you put in there? We've been having a lot of fun with this. Who's a hero to Kellyanne Conway? Who are a couple that come top of mind to you?
I like that Antonin Scalia, the late great justice from the United States Supreme Court, has been mentioned. I think that's very fitting because we don't get enough attention on our judiciary and the outsized influence they have on your personal liberty and pocketbook issues. And Justice Scalia, if you go back and look at his opinions, his concurrences, certainly his dissents, you understand the essence of the United States Constitution. It is not a living, breathing document. It's the law of the land. And he was, I think he set the standard for jurists who don't make up the laws they go along, who don't give in to political pressure, public opinion polling, special interest desires, and the like. So I would have him there. I also think that we've got some modern-day heroes, the inventors, the warriors, the adventurers, that the president was talking about, all these folks who have broken the barriers in their own way that we don't celebrate enough because we watch people violently ripping down statues. And by the way, Nancy Pelosi has walked by those statues and paintings in Statuary Hall thousands and thousands of times, Dom and listeners, thousands of times over her decades in Congress, on her way to vote against school choice, on her way to vote against economic opportunity, on her way to vote against uplifting people in communities of color, including in her native San Francisco, where there are a lot of social problems and people suffering every single day. But it's easier for her to take down, remove statues and remove portraits than to actually help these people.
Kaylee yesterday made the point, and the media went nuts, but it is a true point. Not one question brought up yesterday about the spike in murders this past July 4th weekend, even here in Philadelphia, which is growing notorious, as you know, with Larry Krasner and the gang.
Yeah.
It is astronomical. And when America sees the number of young children, some of them very young, that are involved in this, the media does not want to cover that, and they allow some of these big city mayors to say, somehow or another, it's about the virus that's causing this.
Well, Kaylee made a great point. I've been saying for 5 years that you can talk about biased coverage and over-the-top coverage and unfair coverage, but we should be talking about what I call incomplete coverage, which is more difficult to detect because you don't know what you don't know. It is the media's job to inform the public about everything that's happening. So I always say there's so much news you can use. Everything we've done for veterans, everything we've done for school children, private property owners, people who didn't have jobs and the health care benefits that go with it, they don't cover so many issues that literally touch everyday Americans' lives. And number two, rise to the top of the media's own polling as Americans saying what's important to them. They don't even look at their own polling, Dom, to decide what to cover and what not to cover. That's what I call incomplete coverage.
Even if they differ with the Trump position, you're right. Cover what he's doing and then
just
talk about it.
Give the objective news. There is no news left.
Exactly.
And I think the editors are all out in the Hamptons and Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard. I mean, good God. Do these people not have editors anymore? And
hey,
everybody's their own editor.
How are the beaches where you go? Because over in North Wildwood, where the Giordano's go, they have giant mounds there. There's a big fight going on with Jersey. You're probably not on the beach that much this summer, I guess.
I've been to Ventnor, and so I saw the Atlantic City, Ventnor, and Margate beaches, a little bit of Ocean City. All I can say is people are anxious to get out and get on with their lives. They're there enjoying the surf and the sand. They're trying to enjoy the outdoor restaurants, support local businesses. We can't create a pandemic within a pandemic. We're so scaring, frightening people from going outside that they stay inside, where we see an increase in spousal abuse, child abuse, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, mental health issues. We can't do that to people. We have to safely and securely open up and not be afraid to do that. And no, I saw many people on the beach from my vista on the boardwalk and then from my vista with the kids in the sand and in the ocean. But we were one of many, many families trying to enjoy these first couple weeks of summer. And people want to do that all across this country.
Parting question for you. The president apparently is going to issue executive orders, China, immigration, drug prices. Give us a little feel for any one of those that you think should be on our radar.
Sure. So he's been doing this all along because the Congress just won't show up to work and do their work. We would love to work in a bipartisan fashion with Nancy Pelosi's Congress. They just won't do it. They're not even here. And so in the absence of Congress doing its job, this president is not going to wait for that. He's doing his job. Executive orders recently on insulin, on kidney health. He could do it on infrastructure. He's going to hold China to account for this virus having killed hundreds of thousands of people worldwide in this country, et cetera. He's going to hold them to account. The WHO is being held to account. You know, we have this historic enforceable written trade agreement with China, but let's see if they're keeping up their end of the bargain. China has been peddling fentanyl, synthetic opiate, into our kids' veins and our communities for years now. They've been dishonest about the origins and the spread of this virus, and the president has made very clear he's going to hold them to account. Also, on trade matters, he will continue to protect the USMCA, our trade deals with Korea, with Japan, with China. He'll continue. He's working on some with the EU now. But this president has a mighty pen and a great deal of power to make positive impact and moves for a country without, if Congress is not going to do their job. But remember, whenever you hear him talk about executive order, Dom, it's because Nancy Pelosi has not made good on her promise from a year and a half ago that, quote, we're going to work together on drug pricing, infrastructure, and other issues. It's just not happening. They are the do-nothing, no-show Congress. She now wants them to vote remotely. For what reason are we doing this? You know, she spent her time last summer, about a year ago this week, she spent her time denouncing a tweet. They had a resolution denouncing a presidential tweet. Instead of reducing drug pricing for seniors and others, instead of getting infrastructure going, instead of making sure the digital divide that we have laid bare with so many of our students across this country, millions of kids could not access digital assets so that they could finish the school year safely and securely and competently. And she's not working on that at all. They won't come to the table.
Absolutely. Kellyanne, thank you so much. Good luck, and hope we talk again, certainly before the election.
God bless you and your listeners, Dom. Thank you.
All right. Jersey girl Kellyanne Conway here on Talk Radio 1210. We're headed to the White House with the Surgeon General in a few minutes, but we can get some calls. Inside question of the day. Today is the day they unveil the sliced bread machine. What is the greatest thing since sliced bread? It might be a person. Might be a thing. We've been all over the map with that. We have the Dom Time 2020 calendar ready to go. Imagine that, slicing bread. That's the thing that has stuck with us. The greatest thing since sliced bread. That's 1928. So that is, 92 years we've been saying, people have been saying that. Not as much anymore, but it's still there. Okay, I'm going to ask the Surgeon General about schools. Going to drill down with that. I'll ask him about the mask thing. Governor Wolfman Hack has said he believes by edict we'll have to wear a mask by law outside in Pennsylvania until there's a vaccine. That's what he's looking at. Wow. So we don't see people being fined yet around this, but the mask thing resulted in a big thing. It's going to be consequences on this in Philadelphia, where it's a center city or old city place, and people are, according to this guy who works in politics, he starts hollering at them, "You're not social distancing, you don't have mask on." And according to news accounts, one guy gets into it with them and ultimately pulls his weapon. So watch for that story. There's all sorts of repercussions with that. And people in Philadelphia City Council making that the big story, versus Philadelphia just having horrific, even for Larry Krasner's Philadelphia Violets. And Jim Kenney admitted, well, first he said it's due to guns. Then he said deployment of the police. We don't have enough police because of the protest. He actually said that. Way to go, Jim. That is part of the problem. All right, Bill hasn't weighed in yet. Bill, greatest thing since sliced bread. What do you say?
It's easily streaming. The internet streaming services that you can do, especially in the be able to stream our favorite TV shows and everything, it's better. It's the best thing since sliced bread.
So streaming, not just the internet.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically streaming, because internet is too broad. Like the internet, okay. Al Gore, it's all.
Yeah, all that stuff. All right, so streaming. That's a worthy candidate that takes a big one off the board. I had the iPhone. Dan, what was yours again? Did you weigh in?
Mine was inaccurate. I said the television, which is
the TV, right?
Older,
yeah, yeah, right.
And sliced bread.
Well, that's a dispute. Call Joe Sebelia. We got to find out if that's accurate. Yeah.
I feel like they're pretty close. I would allow it, but Dan's still wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's off by a matter of like 14 months. But.
Okay. Imagine the sliced bread guy though. He's slicing bread, and people are going wild. It's stuck.
You know.
Yeah, go ahead.
I will say, yeah. Like, I was shocked that Dan told me that sliced bread was only invented in 1928. It's something you would think was invented in, like, the 1300s.
Exactly. And when we said which one is older, Betty White or sliced bread, yeah. Betty White is clearly older than sliced bread.
Yes. That's amazing. My grandfather was older than him. He was 95 when he passed. So, I mean, God. He was born in 26.
And that expression has stayed with us pretty much. I don't know if any expression it's taken its place. That's almost as good as, or it's better than, no. Nothing. It's stuck. It's you're right. It should have been invented 1,000 years before that.
Yeah.
Okay. We cleared the decks. Coming up, we're going to go to Washington. We're going to talk with the Attorney General of the We're going to talk with the Surgeon General, who's even bigger at this moment, though, given all the questions I got on Twitter around the mask. Also, back to school. I'm going to start with back to school with the Surgeon General. What are the things that he's trying to do, the Trump administration trying to do? And then the battle. I see that Kate May has warned us about 4 towns to watch out for because of the coronavirus, and they don't like what's happening. The Cape May health authorities. Wildwood, uh-oh. What's the mayor have to say about that? Avalon, and I can't see the other two. My screen is down, but I know those are two. Avalon and Wildwood, watch out. You know, why are they doing that? Doesn't make any sense. The man of the hour to talk with, certainly to me, is the Surgeon General of the United States. Given, despite all the other breaking news, COVID-19, all the reopening, all those things are wrapped into one. So let's go and talk again with Surgeon General Dr. Jerome Adams. Dr. Adams, welcome back to Philadelphia. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, absolutely. And you may or may not know, but I was in Philadelphia last Monday. We had a visit there. We went to Jefferson. We talked to some of the nursing homes there. And I was actually impressed. I went by to visit the swab squad at Jefferson, which is one of the first and largest testing facilities in the country. So I think Philly's doing a good job in terms of flattening the curve. And we just need to help people understand the importance of staying the course and wearing face coverings. Using good hand hygiene, doing the things that we know will allow us to open and to stay open. And that's the difference between now and March. In March, we were telling people, you need to stay home. You need to hunker right. down. What I want people to know now is that we actually have the tools, the resources, the knowledge to be able to safely reopen, but we need the cooperation of the American people. And if they wear face coverings when they go out, we'll actually be able to stay open and they'll have more choices in the future.
Next time you're anywhere near Philadelphia, you got to just have your people let us know. We want to hear what you have to say. I wanted to open with schools, though, Dr. Jerome. Before I got into this, I'm a former teacher. I'm used nationally in education issues. I've just done a special on this, and we'd love to get you on in the next one that we do about going back to school. It is paramount to me that we go back to school in an orderly way in September. I think it's August in Florida. What can you tell us about that? Are you in that camp that come hell or high water, we at least have to try to do that?
Well, great question. And one of the interesting things about being here at the White House is you run into all sorts of interesting people. And literally 5 minutes ago in the hallway, I ran into the president of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And you may have heard they put out a statement last week talking about the health impacts of children being out of school. Less children getting vaccinated, 4.2 million children behind on their vaccinations. We know that children are more likely to be obese or to have substance use disorder or to be victims of child abuse when they're not in school. So there are real health implications of not being in school. That said, we want to make sure when we reopen schools, we do it safely. And we're thinking about the safety of children. We're thinking about whether or not we can successfully get them to wear face coverings during the day. We're thinking about transportation. You know, one of the biggest situations where you're likely to get exposure is on a bus where
sure.
kids are packed into a tight space for a long
time. Well, Dr. Jerome, let me interrupt and say, where are you right now, though? What's the thinking now? Because the clock is ticking. Will they have to wear face coverings, say, in the public schools?
I think that above a certain age, we will recommend that people wear face coverings as a way to limit spread. And from my standpoint, I have 3 kids. Many folks don't know I'm the first Surgeon General in a long time to have school-age kids. I would endorse my kids wearing them if that means that they can get back into school and we can keep schools open. What people need to understand is if they don't wear face coverings and the disease spreads, we're going to be right. more likely to close schools.
What age are we looking at, though? I think that's all important. Now, you are the scientist in this. You are the front line. But I'm somebody who taught in schools. My wife is a pre-K teacher. To have kids 4 and 5 that she teaches all day long with face masks is going to be problematic. I thought the age of 12 was the sweet spot. Is there an age you're looking at?
Well, again, that's something that we're talking with the teachers' unions about, with school teachers about. Both my parents are school teachers, and my sister-in-law is a principal, and we're having this discussion over the dinner table literally right now. I agree with you. I think once you get to middle school and high school, kids can do this. They can tolerate it because they can understand it. I think in the elementary school ages, it gets a little bit harder, especially when you're talking about kindergarten, preschool. And so we're trying to figure out that sweet spot. And some of this is going to be an experiment because there is no blueprint for it. But you're right. At some point, kids aren't going to wear the face covering, or they're going to touch their face so much that it's going to do potentially more harm than good. But I do think that it will be effective, and that we should do it for school ages in middle school and in high school.
All right. The other issue, too, is, and I don't know if you weigh in on this or not, I'm hoping you might, this staggered schedule idea. I can tell you as a teacher of many, many years and all, and the remote learning, as predicted, it's not the same thing. We're not capable on that, particularly here in Philadelphia and the cities and all the rest. There's got to be something orderly here. What are the guidelines around social distancing then that you guys are discussing?
Well, one of the things we're talking about is the importance of recognizing this is a virus that spreads person to person. So the number one way we can prevent spread of the virus is to keep distance at least 6 feet between people. That makes it hard in a school environment. And so you're hearing people talk about outside school, where you can spread people out further and where there's lower risk of spread in places where the weather permits that. That's something people are experimenting with. You hear people talking about staggered school. I live in Virginia. One of the counties is having half the people come for 2 weeks while the other half homeschool, and then they're flip-flopping. My kids got offered the choice of complete homeschooling, which for me, I'm not a big fan of because I like them to have that one-on-one interaction.
Sure.
Or them coming in for 2 or 3 days and then having 2 or 3 days off. So you're seeing many different school districts experiment based on the kids, the families, and the teachers' preferences.
Dr. Jerome,
are you with them to make sure they do it safely.
Are you issuing anything, though? I'm sorry to interrupt, but will you be issuing anything that says, here's where the science leads us with looking at the totality of things? Or is this more up to the schools?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. The CDC actually has guidance on their website, and I would tell people to go to coronavirus.gov and look at the recommendations for K-12 schools. We are absolutely working with school districts and with partners to help them understand what the science says, but then they have to combine that with what they feel they can pull off in their school district. So the science says being outside is important. It's easier to have school outside or to do more outside if you're in Florida than it is if you live in Minnesota. And so that's an example of understanding the science, but then applying it to your own personal situation.
Parting question for you, Dr. Jerome Adams, Surgeon General. Back to masks. I am not a fan of those that are calling for national mandatory masks to be worn all over the place. I do wear a mask. I get the science of it, or at least the building science on this. Where are you with your recommendations around the mask?
Well, number one, the science tells us that the most effective way that we can get back to worship, back to businesses, back to school, back to college football is by wearing a face covering. That's the science. The question is, how do you get there? And what I've found in public health is that people are more likely to do something and do it consistently if you explain to them why they're doing it and how they're going to benefit from it, as opposed to if you just tell them you have to do it or you're going to be penalized. I also, as a black man, am a little bit concerned in this environment where we know people are being disproportionately targeted for selling single cigarettes, for having a fake $20 bill, for falling asleep in a drive-through line, that now we're going to have a police state where we're going to arrest people for not wearing a face covering. I think you're more likely to get compliance if you, again, help people understand why they're doing it. And so I'm trying to educate people about the importance of wearing masks and how they benefit. And they benefit because we reopen society and we keep it open if everyone wears their mask or their face covering. That said, I am not against anyone who chooses on a local or a state level to have a mandate, as long as they are actually working with the people to help them understand why they're doing it and that they're making sure they're not having onerous ways of enforcing it. But I think the most important thing is the education.
Doctor, thank you very much. And again, we mean that if you're in the Philadelphia area or in Pennsylvania, we'd love to talk with you and get an update. Thank you very much, though, for joining us. Go ahead, Doctor.
I absolutely will reach out. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Dom Giordano, weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.